Hello, and welcome to this pre-recorded session for Millennial 2018. And I'm here with Pox Poculi, who is a YouTuber and now Twitterer. So welcome to Millennial, Pox Poculi. Should I address you as Pox? That seems...
Yeah, Pox seems nice.
Okay, all right, Pox. So welcome, and tell the audience a bit about yourself, just to introduce yourself.
Okay, well... So I was born in the United States, and I have an Italian father, 100% Italian. And then, so I actually have dual nationality, dual citizenship. And then on my mother's side, she has Irish, Welsh, and Cornish ancestry. And so from a very early age, I have been fascinated with and drawn to Europe. And as soon as I turned 18, I got my Italian citizenship and I moved to Italy. And since then, I have lived in France as well as Italy, and I currently live in Spain. And Europe for me is just, it's the most beautiful place in the world. European people are, for me, in my opinion, the most interesting, the most warm, the societies that have been built in Europe are the most comfortable. I love the architecture, the old man-made beauty. And so I left the United States to go back to a sort of more homogeneous, beautiful society and culture, and a culture that was deep and had traditions. Because growing up in the United States, I didn't feel very comfortable. I wasn't really accepted as much. And I never really embraced the all-American lifestyle.
Why are we not accepted as much in America?
Well, I guess because of the things that I liked weren't... Like, I liked soccer, football, right? And in America, it's almost... I think it's the most ridiculed sport, at least when I was growing up. Maybe it's changed. And there were just other things, you know. We had a very Italian culture at home as well. And so, my grandmother in Italy used to send us packages every so often. And there'd be all these, what seemed to me as a child, these exotic things, these cheeses, these cured meats, things like that. And so I always just had more of a desire to go to these places where these things came from, or these places that I saw in picture books, these castles, these cathedrals, things like that. And so my spirit was always in the old world. And then also just growing up, you know, the United States, where I grew up, actually became the third most dangerous city in the United States, and purely for demographical reasons. And so I wanted to get away from that. It's also a Rust Belt town. You know what that means, right? Yeah. So there wasn't much joy of life. There was a lot of crime and decay, and so that was sort of the main source of the discomfort.
What was the architecture like around you when you were growing up?
Well, there's a lot of big box stores, a lot of the strip mall architecture, big, long, straight roads.
Yeah.
Car dealerships. And then in the old town, that actually is quite pleasant, but it's decrepit. There's a lot of decaying factories. It looks, in some cases, like a bomb went off. But there are lots of old stone buildings and brick buildings. But it's totally neglected. And it also happens to be the most dangerous part of the city is the old town and the neighborhoods surrounding it. But I used to actually live in the old town and spend a lot of time there. And I did enjoy that.
But still, clearly, something was missing.
Something was missing. And I always just felt more at home in Europe with Europeans.
When did you first visit Europe?
Oh, I first visited Europe when I was, my parents took me to Italy when I was a baby. Then again, when I was 5 years old, I have obviously no clear memories of that. And then it was a long period in the United States. And then when I turned 18, got my citizenship and went straight to Italy.
Okay, I see. So I guess that's, is there anything else you'd like to tell people?
I think that when I sort of mull over this, I think the fact that I did grow up in the United States kind of makes me a bit of a European outsider, as well as when I'm in the United States, I'm kind of an American outsider. And so I have an outsider's appreciation for Europe that many Europeans don't have. It's like when you live under the shadow of that glorious cathedral, you don't realize its importance over time. And for me, coming in as an outsider, in some sense of the word, I feel that sometimes I care more about the future of Europe and the European people than Europeans sometimes who are here living and who've grown up in Europe. And then at the same time, I realize just through life experience that the global citizen, the citizen of the world that the cosmopolitan millennial leftists want to be is not a very good way of life. This feeling of not belonging or not being quite in your place, I'm just a citizen of the world. I can be anywhere. No, I wouldn't wish this on anyone. I mean, this is my situation by happenstance, but it's led me to understand and appreciate the importance of belonging, the importance of a nation. And I don't know, you've traveled around Europe and you know that there are people, especially in continental Europe, who are very proud of not just their country, but their province or their region and their land. And I envy that and I'd really appreciate that. And to see that could all be chipped away slowly or even demolished quite rapidly.
I can see the difference. Like Europe in the mid-90s, for example, mm-hmm. was very different from Europe today. When you travel around Europe now, the cities, not even the capital cities, but just the cities, non-European people are all over the place. Yeah. And it makes you think, it sort of makes you feel animosity towards them when and that's a shame. You know, it's mm-hmm. just the fact that, well, what about us?
Yeah.
You know, where are my people? And this used to be our city, our country, our civilization. And so it does breed this. Diversity plus proximity equals conflict.
It's everything. I this is in the very first video I made on my channel. I talked about how I used to not believe or I didn't want to believe. Like my Italian uncle is very switched on. He's a devout Catholic. He knows what's going on and he has known for a long time. And when I was 18 and started living in Italy, I was quite leftist, going through that sort of obligatory.
Well, I'm sure you were. Yeah.
But I didn't want to believe the things about mass immigration, which has been going on for a long time, decades. And my uncle would tell me things. He would send me videos or articles about the demographic replacement that's happening in Italy and the rest of Europe. And I didn't want to believe it. But because I was in a leftist phase, what I could see and what I did take displeasure with was the Americanization of Europe and the sort of the big box shop mentality coming to Europe and the big fast food chain markets running out the local shops. And as you mentioned, talking about cities, capitals, and things like that, how they all were starting to look the same. And they all started to have the same corporate brands and corporate shops, the multinationals. And those are the things that I wanted to escape from. Some of the things I want to escape from in America, the lack of culture and tradition and that void being filled with corporatism. And I saw that coming to Europe and I thought, well, this isn't good. And then over time, I realized, if I get upset when I see Burger King and McDonald's come into a European city and ruin the beautiful landscape of that city, if I get upset when Burger King and McDonald's drive out the local businesses, the local shops, the local restaurants, why would I then stop and not get upset when that is happening to the European people? How can I deny that and say, oh no, I'm not going to believe it. It doesn't bother me. It's okay. Let these people come into Europe. There won't be any problems. I realized that I was being very hypocritical, and I had to wake up and acknowledge that, okay, maybe the conservatives are right. Maybe my uncle is right, and I'm being childish and naive. And so that was part of the process that started many years ago now about understanding what's going on and trying to fight against it and protect this thing that I love.
Was that quite a troubling change?
No, not really, because in my leftist phase, I always had this nagging voice in the back of my head telling me, you're lying to yourself. This is so stupid. You know, during the I think it was 2011, the Occupy protests, there was one in the town that I lived in America, where I grew up, and I went to it, and it was just LARPers, like people standing outside a bank, the local bank, that had nothing to do with the financial crisis, shouting, you know, communist slogans, workers of the world unite, and it's like, what the fuck are we doing? We're kidding ourselves. And, you know, my uncle would tell me things about, you know, the communists and communism. As you know, it's huge on continental Europe. We still have communist parties and communist politicians. And in Italy, you have to live with them day by day. And he would tell me all about the atrocities of communism and far-left ideology. And, you know, once that information is revealed to you, you have a choice to make. You either deny it and put your head in the sand and delude yourself, or you accept the facts, you accept the realities of history, and you make a moral decision to reject those ideologies if you're an honest person. And so I did the latter, and I'm quite glad that I did.
Okay. So you wanted to talk in this about the dissident right, which, now, first of all, define the dissident right.
Well, for me, the dissident right is comprised of those who have the courage and the curiosity to dig deeper and follow ideas to their logical conclusions. So, you know, I, a few years ago, enjoyed watching the videos of Paul Joseph Watson or Sargon of Akkad, etc. But as the problems facing Europe and the West got more serious, I realized that people like those. And I like them. I like their videos. I like them. They seem like decent people. But I realized that they all stop at a certain point. They don't want to go any further. And I just think that there's no more time for that. And so the dissident right, the identitarians, the Defend Europe movement, Generation Identity, ethno-nationalists, etc., which is what I would consider myself now, are simply those who have the courage and the curiosity to dig deeper and not stop at the point where logic should impel you to keep going. Because there's no more time for being on the fence. There's no more time for being a centrist. It's that time is done. The tide is rising. It's time to pick a boat, get in, and hoist sails. And so, yeah, what I've just been focusing on is making videos for people, like a few friends of mine, family members, who might be traditional conservatives, or they might be very aware of what's happening, but maybe they're not so good at formulating arguments or raising awareness amongst their group of friends. And so you know, I've always liked debate and argument. And so if I can make a video that helps clarify some ideas or helps sharpen the arguments of other nationalists, other members of the dissident right, then I will do so. But that said, I think it's really important that we start manifesting ourselves in the real world. And so I would like to see in my lifetime serious political parties, nationalist political parties, ethno-nationalist political parties, which I think is happening. I think is happening. But I want them to have the courage to say that they're nationalists, to say that we are a Europe for Europeans party, and not stop at civic nationalism or legal immigration is okay type thing, because the legal immigration is destroying us too. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So when you say manifesting in the real world, what would you mean? Be more specific about that. I mean, are you just talking about political parties, or are you talking about something broader than that?
Well, I think Martin Selner is an absolute legend. The activism he does is fantastic. And so that would be a manifestation in the real world. Now, not all of us can be activists. I think that there's something about right-wing mentality that inhibits activism. And a lot of us have jobs. You know, we don't have the time to be activists. We have responsibilities. But I would like to, you know, if this YouTube channel of mine, you know, I don't really know what it will become, but I would hope, my hope is that it will be a springboard to something in the real world, some action that I can take in the real world, whether that's helping to organize a movement or talk to people on the streets. You know, I would like to do that, just get the message out and keep raising awareness. But at some point, I would like to see a challenge made against, for example, the corrupt Catholic Church. I would like to see a challenge made against the ossified conservative parties throughout Europe that have done nothing, conserved nothing. Because I think we need to understand, as you have said very wisely, history is coming back. We need to understand power plays and power dynamics. And if in this tumultuous time we're living in, this chaos is going to create vacuums of power, we need to be the ones who fill that vacuum. Because if we don't, someone else far worse than we've been dealing with now will do so. And that's what I mean by being ready to have power and influence in the real world, and not just having debates and conversations and arguments. The time for that is over. I don't really think there's anything left to debate.
Yeah, I think that's true in terms of the politics. Like, we basically know that we want Europeans to survive. That's fundamentally the thing. We want Europeans to survive because on present trends, the current factors in play, they're not going to survive. They might survive as minorities in their countries, but then that's just eventually they will be either overwhelmed or they will be absorbed into a foreign mainstream. Mm-hmm. So one way or another, right now, the long-term survival of European peoples is not secure at all. And so that is simply a fact. It's inevitable. On the one hand, our enemies will, our opponents, let's say, will deny it. And then on the other hand, they'll celebrate it. They'll admit it that it's true and they'll celebrate it. They can't have it both ways. So it is happening. And I think that's something that we've basically been establishing that for the last few years and coming up with the arguments to explain it and justify the claim and so on. That work is now basically over.
Well, and, to some extent, because, and this is kind of also what I'm doing on my channel. When I make my videos, I have certain people in mind, like friends or family. And then also, I whether by design or by accident, it seems like a lot of my videos are designed or directed to the centrists, the classical liberals, because I think it's high time that they stop with this intellectual wankery and just realize that they basically agree with us. But then you have, you know, here's another example. I like Count Dankula, but last year when they did, or was it, I think it was last summer, when they did the Rally for Freedom, you know, he delivers a speech in which he says, I reject ethno-nationalism. If you are willing to come to my country and respect the freedoms of others, you are welcome in my country. And that's like, well, why don't you just invite the whole fucking world then? What a low standard. If that's your only criteria, if these are the values that they keep going on about, is just respect other people's freedom. That's basically all the goddamn planet.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But at the same time, you see, at the time, and this gets us into, this is a bit of a tangent, but I'll try to get it over with quickly so that we don't get derailed. Because I'm going to talk about this elsewhere anyway, but here it is now. At the time when the Day for Freedom thing happened, I think it was in, it was either April or May, whatever it was. At the time, I did say, this is naive. They're not advocating something. They're advocating freedom for many things. And that could include things that will take them over and eliminate their freedom and whatever. Take them over, basically. So, in other words, it's not enough to advocate freedom for its own sake. You have to advocate something. And that was my feeling at the time. And my feeling now is rather different because of all the stuff that's happened since then. I think that they were probably actually correct, the organizers of that event, because we do need to secure freedom. Because if we don't do that, then we cannot, I mean, apart from anything else, if we don't secure freedom, then we cannot secure what we want. You know, like, in other words, we're getting banned all over the place, not just online, but the states, the governments of Europe are closing in on us. So basically, freedom is absolutely essential to what we do. If we don't have it, we're screwed.
I totally agree. And I think my American, growing up in America has made me appreciate individualism. I consider myself very individualistic. I think that there are certain values that are important, but we need to understand that depending on the circumstances, there is a hierarchy of values, and sometimes one value goes up, another one goes down. And so what I meant when I was sort of criticizing what Dankula said, it's not the freedom that I'm criticizing. It's this, if the only criterion to live in Europe is just respect other people's freedom. That's the whole world. Everyone's going to say that, oh, I respect freedom. We need to realize that legal and illegal immigration is destroying Europe. So it's not, I just thought it was very unhelpful to continue tarnishing this term, ethno-nationalism. Every country outside of the West is an ethno-state. No one disputes that Japan is for the Japanese. No one disputes that Mexico is for the Mexicans. It's only when we talk about Western countries that suddenly the idea of a nation being for the people of that nation is somehow taboo. And so I thought it was unhelpful for him to say, I reject ethno-nationalism. Anyone who's willing to respect the freedoms of others is welcome in my country.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
That's everyone. That will not help you in the long run, and it will not help the survival of the peoples of Europe. And that's another thing that I've been really hammering in these videos, is that I'm tired of this idea that I keep seeing in especially intellectual circles, and I even see Douglas Murray swimming in this stream a lot, that Western civilization is completely cut adrift from the people who built and comprise it.
Oh, yes.
It's just an idea. It's just a system of values. And it's like, we don't say that about any other civilization.
This is very much the neocon attitude. Daniel Hannan has exactly the same attitude. That it's just, well, it's just a set of principles, just a set of ideas. I mean, Sargon has it as well, actually.
Yeah. And again, we don't do this to any... What were the values of Egyptian civilization? Right, we all know that Egyptian civilization is that which was created by the Egyptian people. But when it comes to Western civilization, European civilization, Irish civilization, Italian, whatever, no, it's just an idea. You can completely cut adrift the people, and there's no problem.
And the thing is, we even know that this isn't the case. Like, demonstrably, Liberia, Haiti didn't turn out, or even Singapore and Hong Kong didn't turn out like Europe. Even though they had those beginnings. I think in the case of Liberia, it actually had the American Constitution, which is absolutely ridiculous. Because how did that turn out? So clearly, we know already that it doesn't turn out the same. And then you can look at immigrant communities in Britain, Germany, whatever, of all kinds, like Chinese, for example. They don't just become culturally indistinguishable from the native Europeans. It simply doesn't happen. So even though they are adhering to the principles of Western of that country, they still don't become...
But it doesn't matter.
There's something more than just the principles.
This is that outsider mentality of mine. It doesn't matter. I don't want the Irish people to be replaced by any other group of people. I don't care what the values of the Irish people are. I like Irish people, and I want them to exist. And I wouldn't want them to be replaced by Spaniards or Koreans or Pakistanis. I want them to exist. Full stop. It doesn't matter what the values are. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've often said the same thing. I mean, I've said that I would love the British even if they became communist. So it's got nothing to do with the political system that they're living under, the principles that they uphold or whatever. It's their core nature. It's what they are. It's their being.
Values change. Values change over time. It's like, what values do you want us to live by? The values of Britain 50 years ago, 100 years ago, were different than they are now. So what's going on? By the way, have you seen Sargon's video on, it's called It's Okay to Be a Nationalist?
Yes.
He's coming around, isn't he? I mean, come on.
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on with Sargon. And I don't want to... I let him speak for himself because he's... I don't want to... I mean, he's got enough on his plate just now, so I don't want to...
Yeah, sure.
I think that he doesn't care about race. I think that he really genuinely doesn't care about race. If he is talking about... I can't remember what the content of that video was, but...
He was criticizing Macron.
Yeah, and I remember he brought in Donald Trump saying that he was a nationalist and all this. Mm-hmm. But I think that he's talking about civic nationalism still, and like he has been for several years now. Mm. But I do think he understands the dangers of mass immigration, the cultural dangers of mass immigration.
Which is what I'm saying, is that they understand, they've identified the same evil that we've identified. It's just that we dig deeper to the solution. And they stop. They don't want to go so far. And, you know, about race and all that, a few years ago, I would have said the same thing. I don't care about race. I care about maybe the ethnicities, the nations of Europe and things like that. Because I don't want to get into, and that's why I've been working on a few videos recently about sort of making a unified and unifying set of morals and values for the new right and for the 21st century that we can actually live by that go deeper than tolerance and diversity. But because I don't want to get too bogged down in what I observed in the alt-right was, you know, the Northern European gene pool is pure and better than the Mediterranean European gene pool. And it's like, well, we're all Europeans here, and we all probably have a bit of Germanic in us simply because of the expansion of the Germanic tribes.
I just think it's something that's not really worth worrying about.
Exactly. So I understand if people like, you know, the centrist, the class would say, I don't want to get into the race stuff. Fine. Fine, then let's stop bickering about it, put it aside, let's unite on what we do agree matters, and stop with all the other arguments about semantics.
Yeah, and the counter-signaling and the backbiting and the bitching.
I'm just, that's what I've observed, and I'm so fed up with it, it drives me crazy. And that's getting back to, you know, the real-world manifestations of this movement has to be a united front. And we smashed them on all the arguments, the NPCs, the far leftists, the globalists. They have nothing. Their arguments are based on pillars of sand. We can take them apart just with one push, but we are not a united front. So it's all that more complicated because we're not united.
Yeah. A lot of energy and thought is waste, and time, of course, is wasted.
Yep.
Dealing with pointless, unnecessary conflicts. And it's just absurd. Vendettas and all the rest of it. But I completely agree. And you're absolutely right that our opponents, they've completely lost the argument. And that's why they have to, at this point, rely on censorship. And that's why they're going for censorship in a huge way. Sargon, whom we just mentioned, has just lost his Patreon.
Yeah.
He lost his Twitter like a year ago or 2 years ago now on something completely, some frivolous grounds. But that's irrelevant. Well, I mean, it's kind of irrelevant. But the Patreon thing is much more important because that's because of his political activities, supposedly. Yeah.
No, that's getting very scary because it's, you know, it is getting to the point now where what are we going to see? Bank accounts, real bank accounts being frozen because of your political opinions. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. But in order to combat that, again, we don't stand a chance without a united front. We absolutely have to. I mean, all of these different factions have to join forces. You know, I really believe that. I don't think that we stand a chance otherwise. And, you know, that will not be an easy process. I see numerous members of the alt-light disavowing and all that still. I think they're still thinking that the left will eat them last if they behave well, which, you know, good luck. But that kind of stuff has to end. It simply has to, because on our own, each one of these factions, I don't think is powerful enough or potent enough to win, honestly. Yeah. But combined, we could. Yeah. It's essential now.
And also, it simply is, from an argumentation point of view, you have to be confident in your beliefs. So if we have people in this movement who are too afraid to speak the truth or don't want to speak a truth that they acknowledge, but they just don't think it's good optics or whatever, that's not helpful, because you can't win unless you're fully committed and you fully believe in what you're saying. So if you're going to acknowledge the evils of mass immigration and the destruction of the European peoples, and that's something that worries you, but then at the same time, you're going to still, you know, I disavow ethno-nationalism or all these things like that, then you're putting forward a weak, a weakened front, and the image you're projecting to your adversaries is one of a weak foe that can be defeated, because you don't have the guts to even stand up for your own argument and follow your own ideas to their logical conclusions, their necessary conclusions.
Yes, I completely agree. But again, I think that a lot of people are scared, and I really understand that. I think that's very human and inevitable, because there's a lot of pressure of various kinds being put on people. And also in the case of the alt-light, I think that a lot of them understand instinctively, but they haven't really thought it through consciously. So they're not able to, you know, to make the arguments necessary in order to justify their positions. But that's something that we can help them with, of course.
I think that's kind of what's happened with my channel, is that I'll have conversations with my parents. I'll have a conversation with, you know, some of my family's actually disowned me, and I've lost a lot of friends. I think we all have. And then I'll have conversations with some friends of mine, and then I'll make a video, and I think it's what I usually do is I'm just making videos that kind of hold them by the hand and guide them through this thought process of, okay, if you acknowledge that mass immigration is wrong, if you accept and you see the realities that are happening with demography and that worries you, et cetera, then these are the things that we need to do. And these are the positions that we need to hold. And so for me, it's just a process of digging deeper and being intellectually honest and realizing, okay, like first I was calling myself a conservative. Then I started calling myself a nationalist as I started exploring more and more of these different ideas and positions and what's necessary to believe these days. And right now I've arrived to the point where I think it's just essential that you honestly declare Europe is for the Europeans, the people of European descent, wherever they live, also need to be preserved, and America is an offshoot of Europe, and therefore the majority of people who live there should be of European descent, and the same is true for Canada and Australia. Well, that's ethno-nationalism. So stop cucking about, stop being afraid, stop making it a taboo word, and let's be honest. And I think I can do this because I have the luxury of a small channel and I have no pressures. No one's, if I get my channel taken down, so what? I have 30 subscribers. It's not a big deal. But what I'm doing in these videos is just basically helping in any way I can people who are on the fence or are sort of traditional conservatives understand that there is nothing wrong in saying Europe is for the Europeans. The Dalai Lama said it. Okay. I don't think he is a far-right neo-Nazi. I think we can all agree. And so if he can say it, so can we.
Yeah, of course. And perhaps people listening to this will probably be largely on our side already, but perhaps they will know people who are on the verge or struggling with these ideas and so on, and therefore perhaps your channel would be a good place to direct those people.
That would be very flattering. I would be honored if that is some use that I could serve.
I think it could be, based on what you've said.
Well, so right now I've been making videos in a series. It's called Ethno-Nationalist Values, because I do get really annoyed when I hear everyone going on and on about values, from Guy Verhofstadt to Emmanuel Macron to Hillary Clinton. All these people just can't shut up about values, but they're never defined. Or if they are defined, they're nothing deeper than tolerance and diversity. These are not values, and you cannot build a civilization on them, nor can you continue a civilization on them. And so, long story short, essentially, the values that I'm identifying are all Christian values. I'm not a practicing Christian, but let's be honest. I don't think you can have the West without Christianity. And so, the first video I made was about the value of pride and how we need to start taking pride in who we are again, and not being ashamed of who we are. And we need to stop being gaslighted into doubt, you know. And then the second one was about joy and how we need to find joy in life. And that was something that I came across in an article about a book about World War II, the World War II generation of Brits, and how they are horrified by what they see in Britain today. And one of the things that they talk about is how, you know, we didn't have much money in when we were growing up. We didn't have many things, but we were happy. We were contented. There was singing in the streets and things like that. And that's something my uncle even told me. He's in his 60s. And I remember him saying the same thing when we were walking through an Italian town. He was saying, wow, it's so silent. Where's the music? Where's the singing? People used to whistle and sing in the streets. And I think that's a good atmosphere to live in, that atmosphere of joy and contentment, even if things aren't going so well. And it's difficult in this day and age to find that. And then the most recent video I made in this series was about the importance of Christian moral strictures and a codified morality that we could live by. And I think that most of that morality will come from Christianity. If we're going to fight against, you know, the degeneracy that we're seeing in our society, we're going to need a strong, muscular set of moral code. And that comes from Christianity. And we have 2,000 years of Christianity. So I understand there's this paganism movement, but I don't think it's going to be deep enough or strong enough to oppose the global homo agenda. You know what All I
right. mean? Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I'm not sure what to say about this, but I think you're probably correct. Okay, so is there anything else you'd like to say before we close?
No, I think that's it. Oh, I mean, obviously, I just want to thank you for all the videos you've done, all the work you do. You're an inspiration, man. I wish you all the best. And never give up.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay, so this was Pox Populi. So I'll say it again. This was Pox Populi appearing on Millennial 2018. So I hope this was useful to you, and I hope that you go and take a look at his channel.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, and all right, I'll see you all later.